Coming up, Kim Lawton on religious responses to the Boston bombing. And Lucky Severson on faith leaders calling for action to protect the environment.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Welcome, I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. In the wake of this week's series of events in Boston, people of faith around the world have been offering prayers for victims of the bombing and for the entire city. President Obama spoke at an interfaith service Thursday at Boston's Cathedral of the Holy Cross.
You've shown us, Boston, that in the face of evil, Americans will lift up what's good. In the face of cruelty, we will choose compassion.
Kim Lawton has more on religious responses in Boston.
At Thursday's interfaith service, local religious leaders prayed for the healing of their city in the wake of the attack.
We must overcome the culture of death by promoting a culture of life. A profound respect for each and every human being made in the image and likeness of God. And we must cultivate a desire to give our lives in the service of others.
Within moments of the bombing, clergy and faith-based groups mobilized to do what they could to help. As victims of the bombing were brought to Tufts Medical Center, interfaith chaplain Mary Lou Vanu was on site to offer counseling and prayer. She says one injured woman expressed what many were feeling.
She said, the hardest thing about this is that some human beings can treat other human beings like this. I just don't understand it.
Indeed, Vanu says after a tragedy like the bombing, clergy often hear age-old questions about the nature of good and evil, suffering, and the existence of a loving God.
You know, most of the time, I think people deep down aren't asking for an answer. They're asking for you to fight with and wrestle with the questions with them. But we truly believe that God is with us when it happens, and so we're not suffering alone, that we have someone who loves us beyond all measure.
Rabbi Yitzhak Korf, chaplain for the city of Boston, is helping to oversee counseling for first responders.
It's important that these people understand once they have fulfilled their duty to the citizenry, the people that they're serving and protecting and saving and making to feel safe and secure, they need to face any feelings that they may be having as well.
He says many of the victims and first responders are still in shock and will deal with the theological questions later. Even then, he says, there will be little ultimate satisfaction.
The macro answer is we don't know God's plan. You know, I don't know of anybody that God's, you know, called and said, you know, here's the deal. And so there's an unknown. Prayer and meditation can help bring a sense of calm.
Muslims in Boston and across the U.S. were quick to condemn the bombing. Imam William Suhaib Webb of the Islamic Society of Boston Cultural Center says all of the members of his mosque felt the attack.
They felt very violated, and they felt that the sacredness of the city was violated, and that the trust of our populace was violated. So there's a sense of wanting this person to be caught and subjected to justice.
Webb helped organize the interfaith prayer service and urged his congregation to donate blood and find other ways to serve those who are suffering.
Reminding people in God's wisdom, and then also reminding that we are not allowed to use his wisdom to be placid or inactive. We have to go out and help and work and be positive and stay involved.
Some faith groups found unusual ways to offer help. Lutheran Church Charities dispatched its Canine Comfort Dog Ministry.
People many times, all ages, will talk to a dog before they'll talk to a person.
The ministry took the specially trained dogs to Boston hospitals to visit victims and their families and set up a petting station at a local church. Ministry leaders had also taken the dogs to Newtown, Connecticut after the school shooting.
Whether it's a bombing or a shooting or a divorce or death, whatever happens in life, which life throws a lot of stuff at us, they bring the mercy and the compassion of Christ and comfort to people that need to work through whatever it is they're facing.
Rabbi Korf says the bombing had a profound spiritual impact on the city.
We rely on a sense of knowing if I do this and this is what's going to happen. And so that's what gets upset, what upsets the balance in these critical incidents. And that's what needs to be restored as quickly and as easily as possible.
He and other religious leaders urge the community to come together in grief and then move forward with a new sense of hope. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
We want to talk now via Skype with Reverend Samuel Lloyd, the priest in charge at Trinity Episcopal Church right in Copley Square in Boston, where the bombs went off. We are old friends. Sam, welcome. What can a pastor say to his people at a time like this, a terrible time like this, and what are people saying to you?
I think the pastor first needs to acknowledge what a trauma this has been and listen carefully to what people are saying. And what I hear a lot is a sense of the fragility of people's lives and their sense of how vulnerable they've been. And so what I have been doing and will continue to do as I'm with my community is to remind them of the core convictions of a power behind all of life that is sustaining us and our faith in a God who goes with us even through the toughest of times and promises always to bring healing beyond the crisis at hand.
What about the old questions of where was God in this and how could God have permitted so much suffering? Are you hearing that at all?
I'm not hearing it as much as I did after 9/11. It's more people's sense of fragility. But when those questions come, they always invite an explanation of the fact that we are people who've been given extraordinary freedom, we in this human race. And with that comes the enormous possibility of love and delight and also the kind of terror we've seen.
And also comes the ability to do terrible things.
That's right, to do unimaginable damage. And yet that's never the last word.
People around the country are being told by officials and pastors to pray for the people of Boston. What do you suggest we pray for?
Prayer is an enormously important gift in this time because it binds all of us together as a country. I think it's a great gift that people are praying for the people of Boston. I'd ask them to pray for courage and strength as we continue to make our way through a time of trauma. I'd ask them to pray for a sense of our own connectedness to each other. And I'd ask them especially to pray for the magnificent police, law enforcement people, medical people, and first attenders who have done an amazing job and continue to be doing crucial work. They are a model for us all.
But the thing I'm interested that the primary thing that you have been hearing is fear. And what do you say about how faith can cope with that?
Well, one of the first things I say is that fear loves isolation. And what we need to do is be in touch with each other. So I'm encouraging my community to text and email and call people they know and love and care about, get together as they can, because we are reminders to each other of the faith we carry and the trust we've known and the love we've known through the years that gives us the courage to continue on in what we're doing. And second thing I do is I try to send them even back to their old scriptures, where the psalm for this Sunday is, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." And I'm sending everybody back to be reading that day and night these days to be reminded that there's someone holding us.
Hmm. Anything good that you see coming out of the response to this terrible thing?
You know, amazing. There's been immense good. It's just as when the sky is at its darkest, we can see the most light. In this dark time, we see the love and care that emerges. And I've been thinking a lot about what Mr. Rogers said in response to 9/11. Someone asked him what his advice was, and he said, keep your eye on the helpers. And if you look at the helpers, you're seeing this as a story of enormous courage and compassion and devotion that makes you proud to be a Bostonian and proud to be a human being and grateful for a God of love working through all of this.
Reverend Samuel Lloyd, the priest in charge at Trinity Episcopal Church in Copley Square in Boston. Sam, many thanks.
You're welcome, Bob.
Faith groups also offered prayers this week for victims of the massive explosion at a fertilizer plant in Texas. Many people were killed and more than 150 wounded. An independent, nonpartisan report released this week says there is indisputable evidence that the United States engaged in torture in the years following the 9/11 attacks. The authors, among them a member of the Bush administration, cited detailed discussions involving President George W. Bush and his top advisors on, quote, the wisdom, propriety, and legality of inflicting pain and torment on detainees. The task force found no firm or persuasive evidence that the CIA's interrogation methods provided useful information that could not have been obtained by other means. Pope Francis has expressed his support for the controversial crackdown on American nuns begun under Benedict XVI. Last year, the Vatican charged the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the largest organization of U.S. nuns, with, quote, serious doctrinal problems. In a meeting with the group this week, a Vatican official said Francis affirmed those findings. We have a Lucky Severson story today about religious environmentalists. In the past, and still, many people of faith have opposed the environmental movement, quoting Bible verses about mankind's God-given dominion over all the earth, or they deny the need to protect the environment on the grounds that the end times are imminent, so why worry about nature? But now, for many people of faith, liberal and conservative, of many traditions, being good stewards of God's creation has become an urgent cause.
This would have been an unlikely occurrence only a few years ago. 80 clergy and lay leaders from a broad range of religions across the U.S. converging on Capitol Hill to lobby Congress about climate change and protecting the environment. They're all part of a national organization of faith leaders known as Interfaith Power and Light, or IPL, which was founded by Reverend Canon Sally Bingham, an Episcopal priest.
We started out asking congregations to respond to climate change. And as more and more religions got involved, we realized what we were actually doing was bringing religions together where they could all agree on something. There were Hindu, Baha'i, Mormons, Catholics, Evangelicals, Protestants, Jews, Muslims, all agreeing with each other. We are the stewards of creation.
Altogether, there are now over 14,000 houses of worship in 40 states connected to IPL, places like Adat Shalom Congregation in Maryland. Fred Sherlander Dobb is a rabbi, and he says religion is deepening his congregation's concern for the environment.
Ultimately, love of the Creator and love of that which God has created are one and the same. If you don't love creation, what does it mean to say that you love God who so loved creation?
Sarah Jewett is a director of a Washington area group called Green Muslims, made up of young professionals like herself. She's an urban planner.
It's an issue that isn't a priority for a lot of the communities that we see. Mosque leadership, you know, they're just now starting to talk about it. You see it more and more on university campuses, but it's a recent phenomenon.
Reverend Bingham says she became a priest because God called her to speak out on the environment when no one else was.
They're afraid to get into the pulpit and talk about something that they really don't know a lot about. But how can you sit in a pew and profess a love for God and then sit back and watch creation be destroyed?
These Pennsylvania IPO members are practicing what they preach. They bicycled 200 miles from State College, Pennsylvania to Washington, stopping at churches along the way. They are here to lobby Congress to strengthen environmental laws. John Brockoff is a professor of history and religious studies at Penn State.
You talk to people about their major faith experiences. Something like 90% of people will think of something that happened to them out in the woods, on a mountain, somewhere along the beach. There's something about the natural environment, the environment around us right now, that really speaks to people and speaks to us of a higher power.
The Green Muslim board members meet once a week to discuss teachings from the Quran and Hadith about protecting the earth. Sarah says the Prophet Muhammad was a tree hugger literally because he actually hugged a tree after he heard it wailing.
It just shows so much about his character as a compassionate being, and it helps me be more compassionate and to really live more lightly in this world.
They also get their hands dirty, working at a local farm, cleaning up parks, and renting out reusable dinnerware.
We started renting out reusable dinnerware as a way to get individuals to lessen their waste during Ramadan. And so instead of wasting a bunch of styrofoam, we actually take our tableware and we'll take it home and wash it. And we had about 600, 700 people over the month that were using it, and that's a lot of waste that was reduced.
They say it's their faith and scriptures and not their politics that drive their views on the environment.
Deuteronomy chapter 20, verse 19, it's a law in wartime about not cutting down the enemy's trees, even when it could give you military advantage and perhaps even save combatants' lives. If we're not allowed to cut down a tree that belongs to the enemy under such dire circumstances, how much more should we not allow trees to be felled simply for the convenience of the international economy?
Very often we have a bigger impact with a congregation by talking to them about, do you want to save money on your energy bill? And very seldom does a congregation say, oh no. They usually say, yes, how do we do that?
A number of houses of worship that belong to IPL combine their purchasing power to buy cheaper electricity from renewable energy at rates which can amount to huge savings, especially for the larger churches. IPL also encourages utilizing renewable energy, like the solar panels on the roof of the Adat Shalom Synagogue.
We have saved many thousands of dollars over the course of 11 years running this building because of passive solar technology, because of sensitive lighting that we put in place. It absolutely keeps operating costs down. So if you make an investment in something like a really efficient boiler, it makes a tremendous difference.
We are asking our congregations to serve as examples to the community. And then the hope is that when the religious leader can tell his or her congregation that they're saving money on energy, that people will say, oh, I'll go home and we'll do some of these same things in our homes.
Reverend Bingham says in the beginning of her ministry, she faced a lot of resistance.
I was accused of promoting world government. I was called a communist. I was accused of taking a political issue into the pulpit, which was highly against anything Americans believe in, merging church and state. But that hasn't happened in the last 5 to 6 years.
There's still pushback from some churches and groups with religious and political connections, like the Conservative Evangelical Cornwall Alliance.
The religious and political environmental movement, what we call the Green Dragon, has become one of the greatest threats to society and the church in our day.
Its twisted view of the world elevates nature above the needs of people, of even the poorest and the most helpless. With millions falling prey to its spiritual deception, the time is now to stand and resist.
It's complete nonsense. I mean, you can go into scripture and find that God put Adam in the garden to till it and to keep it. And we are the gardeners. We have not done a very good job. And I would dispute anything that is behind the Green Dragon.
The Cornwall Alliance produced the Resisting the Green Dragon series and sent them to churches around the country.
The average poor household spends a much higher percentage of its budget on electricity and other energy sources than does the average middle class or wealthy household. That means that when we raise the price of energy, we're hurting the poor more than we hurt everybody else.
Dave Hunter takes a view opposite of the Cornwall Alliance video. He thinks the poor, particularly in other countries, will be hurt the most if something is not done about climate change.
If we don't do anything about climate change, the people who are going to be hit most by that are the people who have the least. And so, to me, that becomes a moral issue.
Climate change is going to cause food scarcity, the likes of which we have never seen.
Just outside the Adat Shalom Synagogue, the congregation has built and is expanding an organic garden where members are taught how to grow their own vegetables and donate part of what they harvest to food pantries. Rabbi Dobbs says observing the Sabbath, or Shabbat, as God did after he created the earth, is one way to help preserve it.
One day in seven is, of course, Sabbath, right. And that is a day of just being, not of doing. It's a stepping back from the rat race of production and consumption. Mm-hmm. And as Jews, it's our most special time.
Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah.
Sarah Juwade thinks the cluttered and polluted world around us is a reflection of what's going on inside ourselves, and that the best way to find ourselves is in the quiet and beauty of nature.
When I pray, I feel the most connected when my prayers are outside or when I'm thinking about a natural setting, things like that. I feel God's presence in those moments. I mean, he's everywhere all the time. And different parts of the faith speak to different people, sure. But that speaks to me.
On Capitol Hill, lobbyists from Interfaith Power and Light are becoming a fixture.
Even if they don't persuade them in that meeting, they may be able to next time. If we can point out to skeptical legislators that this is a real issue, it's not going away, they have a moral responsibility to serve the American people. And if the American people want climate legislation and want clean air and clean water, they'll come around.
She says if enough houses of worship join the effort, Interfaith Power and Light will become a force of nature. For Religion and Ethics News Weekly, I'm Lucky Severson in Washington, D.C.
On our calendar this week, members of the Baha'i faith celebrate the Feast of Ridvan. The 12-day holiday commemorates the Prophet Baha'u'llah's announcement in 1863 that he was the new messenger of God. 50 years ago, this April, in Birmingham, Alabama, Martin Luther King, Jr. was arrested for organizing a civil rights demonstration. He spent 8 days in jail in solitary confinement, and it was there that he wrote his classic vigorous defense of nonviolent civil disobedience, his Letter from Birmingham Jail. This week in Birmingham, Christian leaders gathered to apologize for 1960s-era moderates who had urged King to be patient and not permit direct confrontations. They also urged people of faith today to continue Dr. King's anti-racism campaign.
We have to come together and say, what is the agenda that we share for fixing what's broke, fixing broken people, broken families, broken nations, broken cities, broken communities?
It was in his letter from Birmingham Jail that Dr. King wrote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." Finally, legendary gospel singer George Beverly Shea died this week at the age of 104. Shea became famous as the featured soloist at Billy Graham Crusades. During his 80-year career, he recorded more than 70 albums of hymns and wrote several popular worship songs. In 2011, just before receiving a Grammy for Lifetime Achievement, he spoke with Kim Lawton.
Someone said, you know, why have you been doing this all the years? I put my thumb up in the air toward heaven. I said, I've been doing it for him, you know.
Say says his faith keeps him going, and he sees every day as a gift.
I don't know when heaven will loom up for me, But we would have to look forward to it. I hope there'll be an organ up there to play. Yeah. Oh, boy, I love organ music.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's always more on our website, including more of our interviews about religion and the environment, and links to additional environmental resources. Audio and video podcasts are also available. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, the Boston Children's Chorus performing at the Interfaith Prayer Service for victims of this week's bombing.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company. And the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Be more. PBS.